welcome to
Killing It
on Broadway. I'm Jennifer Simard.
And I'm Jessica Vosk. And this is the podcast where we discuss all things guts, gore, murder, and mayhem.
It's not safe for work. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Jennifer.
And hi, Rashadra Scott.
Hello. How are you?
Better now that you're here.
She did that in a mix.
So sweet.
She did. Hello.
Hello.
Oh, there it is.
There we go.
There it is. Rashidra's here, y'all. Hi.
Oh, I'm so happy you're here. Rashidra, you are truly one of our favorite colleagues, one of our favorite Broadway gal pals.
Your career
it keeps shining and brighter, with every passing season. And can't wait for what's on the horizon. But despite all the starry things ahead of you on that horizon,
we don't want to talk
about that today whatsoever.
Let's put a shade on that light. We don't need it right now.
Let's put a shade on that light. That's right. Now that's a new ism. So for all of our killers out there, you know, who are buying up the merch, who are on the Patreon, keep your little, you know, Patty Ann get in the car for Patty LuPone. Put that shade on that light for Rishi Driscoll. Like, let's just keep it all in your little ticker.
Yes.
Because we love a one-liner. There's nothing better than a one-liner. I'm an Italian from Jersey, and that's my one-liner. So Rashidra, as you well know, along with our listeners who are faithful to us, you know, every week, we are true crime all the time, all day, all night, and we would love to know if you are into true crime, A, why, like, are you? That's A.
Yes.
B, and why do you think that all of us, especially in the entertainment industry, love true crime so much?
I mean, you know, I'm going to give this stereotypical answer that it's what we do. Our jobs are to research people and to watch people and to study them. And I'm always fascinated by, like, what makes people tick to those extremes. And so it's kind of a three-parter answer. So one, I've told Samard before that the house I grew up in, my stepdad built our fence by hand, and he ended up having to build out a corner of the fence around a very small family graveyard that had like six headstones in it, just right there. And I'm a Scorpio, born on November 1st. I just missed being born on Halloween by 33 minutes. And so, like, my mom, and it was because my mom, she was like, I refuse to have a witch for a baby. I'm not pushing before midnight. Like, she was fully dilated. She had a bet going with the doctor. He's like, you're not going to be able to hold this child in. And she's like, no, I'm not doing it. Tell me when it's midnight and I'm going to push. And I was born at 12:32, November 1st.
Oh my God.
She did it.
God.
She was determined. But I always sometimes joke, like, our running joke when she's mad at me is that the clocks in the hospital were wrong and that I was, in fact, born a witch. And so with my birthday being so close to Halloween, sometimes I would have Halloween-themed birthday parties. And our first year in the house that I grew up in, because he was still building the fence, there was nothing to block us off from the wrought iron fence around the family cemetery. And so I, like, had my friends at like 11:30 at night walking over just in the pitch Virginia Beach black, walking over to see how close we could get to the gravestones, because why wouldn't you do that?
Of course you would.
I mean, come on.
Of course you would.
So there was that. I've also told Samard that my college apartment was haunted. I would wake up within the same like hour and a half or so, I'd be asleep. And all of a sudden, it would just feel like someone was standing over me. And I would wake up, open my eyes, and it was one of two spots that I would always just see this figure just kind of wavering in, like, either the doorway between my bedroom and the kitchen or just to the right of me over me in the bed. And it would stay there for a few seconds, and then it would just go away. And I would call my mom, and she's like, yeah, okay. I mean, she didn't not believe me, but she didn't fully really pay attention until she came to spend a weekend with me.
Uh-oh.
And she stayed in the proper bedroom. I was in Boston, so it was a one split. I was using the official living room as my bedroom. But she was in the actual bedroom. And I knew that she had seen it the night before because I came home from work the next day and she had completely feng shui'd my apartment. And I never saw it again, but when I asked her about it, she said it's because within that same hour and a half that I would always wake up and tell her, she said she also felt something and she woke up, opened her eyes, And that bed was right next to the window that was at the fire escape. And she said in that window, she saw exactly what I had been describing to her for a year and a half. And after she feng shui'd, I never saw it again.
So she's a witch.
She's the witch. And
yeah.
She's like, no, I don't think so. She just cleared that spirit right out.
Uh-huh.
You're her baby. She still took care of you. She protected you.
And then I want to know like, the story of that apartment,
though.
Welcome to the coven.
She was like, you're in the
coven. Oh, my God. Actually, it was your mom. It was your mom on the fire escape for a year and a half, just checking on you at school.
Like, is she doing her homework? Is she not with anyone? What's happening over there?
Now, Rashidra, you're from Virginia. You mentioned Virginia Beach.
Yes.
That's where you're from. Amazing, because that's where our story is from today.
Yeah. And I've actually spent a little bit of time in like the Western Virginia Roanoke area where a lot of this takes place because a little known fact, I'm a former pageant girl, Miss America system, and Miss Virginia every year takes place in Roanoke, which is in that county of Bedford County where all this takes place.
Well, I consider myself a pageant trust as well in the confines of my bathroom. And I don't mind, you know, I win every day and I love astrology. Yes. You know, I love a horoscope.
But I know you do.
Jen, I digress. Please take us forward.
All right. Well, here at the KIOB, we like to cover subjects sometimes other than murder. And that includes today's case. It's a mystery to end all mysteries. But first, credit where credit is due. Props once again to Wikipedia. Killers, we love things like this case. I think we can all agree. So this story is known today by three titles. It is known as the Beale Treasure or the Beale Ciphers, also known as the Beale Papers. Whatever your preference, it's an unsolved treasure trove of a mystery. So here we go. The Beale Ciphers or Beale Papers are a set of three cipher texts, one of which allegedly states the location of a buried treasure of gold, silver, and jewels, estimated to be worth over $43 million as of January 2018. Comprising three cipher texts, the first, unsolved text, describes the location. The second, which was solved, it contains the content of the treasure. And the third, also unsolved, lists the names of the treasure's owners and their next of kin. The story of the three cipher texts originates from an 1885 pamphlet detailing treasure being buried by a man named Thomas J. Beale in a secret location in Bedford County, Virginia, in the 1820s. Beale entrusted a body. I'm sorry, Rashidra, that is pageant land?
Yes.
Area? Bedford County. Okay. Do you have a crown, by the way? I thought I remember seeing
your
tiara.
I actually just found it unpacking. Yes. I have four of them from my locals, and each of my sisters, my two sisters and my mother have one, and then I have the last one.
Oh, Rashidra, you're McQueen. I love you. Okay.
God, my stars and stripes.
I know.
You know what? I auditioned for, was it Miss California for Little Miss Sunshine years ago?
Yeah.
And I legit took my, like, I brought my crown with me and wore it in my audition.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Oh, all right.
I think you should be wearing it in every audition after this is over, after the Coco's done.
Could you imagine me going into sister act auditions wearing my Miss America local crown?
Absolutely. I'd be like, oh my God, Bernie, it is so good to see you again. Thank you so much. I have a 16 to 23. 1 second though. This is my good luck charm. Pleasure. Bless.
All right. So Beale entrusted a box containing the encrypted messages to a local innkeeper named Robert Morris and then disappeared, never to be seen again. That sounds fishy. Here's a very valuable box to this innkeeper I'm going to trust, and then I disappear. I suspect you, Robert Morris. Anyway, according to the story, the innkeeper opened the box 23 years later and then decades after that gave the three encrypted ciphertexts to a friend before he died. The friend then spent the next 20 years of his life trying to decode the messages and was able to solve only one of them, which gave details of the treasure buried and the general location of the treasure. The unnamed friend then published all three ciphertexts in a pamphlet which was advertised for sale in the 1880s. Since the publication of the pamphlet, a number of attempts have been made to decode the two remaining ciphertexts and to locate the treasure, but all efforts have resulted in failure. There are many arguments that the entire story is a hoax, including the 1980 article, A Dissenting Opinion, by cryptographer Jim Gilligley, and a 1982 scholarly analysis of the Beale Papers and their related story by Joe Nickel, using historical records that cast doubt on the existence of Thomas J. Beale. Nickel also presents linguistic evidence demonstrating that the documents could not have been written at the time alleged. Words such as stampeding, for instance, are of a later vintage. His analysis of the writing style showed that Beale was almost certainly James B. Ward, whose 1885 pamphlet brought the Beale Papers to light. Nickel argues that the tale is thus a work of fiction, specifically a secret vault allegory of the Freemasons. James B. Ward was a Mason himself. A single pamphlet published in 1885 entitled The Beale Papers is the only source of this story. The treasure was said to have been obtained by an American named Thomas J. Beale in the early 1800s from a mine to the north of Nuevo Mexico. At that time, in the Spanish province of Santa Fe de Nuevo Mexico, an area that today would most likely be a part of Colorado. According to the pamphlet, Beale was the leader of a group of 30 gentlemen adventurers from Virginia who stumbled upon the rich mine of gold and silver while hunting buffalo. You just imagine that, like, look at that giant buffalo with a gold necklace around his neck.
I would.
No.
I would be that. That would be me. I'd be like, Barrett, Oregon Trail. Mm-hmm. Oregon Trail.
Oh, my God.
Who's
just before I died of syphilis or typhoid, I found buffalo with a gold chain.
Get the cow.
Yeah. Look at the cow. They spent 18 months mining thousands of pounds of precious metals, which they then charged Beale with transporting to Virginia and burying in a secure location. After Beale made multiple trips to stock the hiding place, he then encrypted three messages: the location, a description of the treasure, and the names of its owners and their relatives, as we mentioned. The treasure location is traditionally linked to Montvale in Bedford County, Virginia. Now, Rashija, you mentioned this area in pageant land. How far is that from where you grew up?
Driving, because there's no direct route there. It's about a 6-hour drive. Mm. If we could go straight across, probably like 2.5 to 3.
Oh, isn't that funny?
Yeah. Like, well, we have to go up to Richmond, which is 1.5 hours away, and then go west to get out to Bedford County, Rhode Oak area.
Got it.
Well, hence the Oregon Trail. And
maybe that's how they pay for the pageants. Maybe that's how they paid for the pageants all this time. They found the treasure.
Listen,
they're expensive.
So the reason that I never won, confession, is because I actually know where the treasure is hidden. But my job was to not tell anyone for those purposes. Yes.
Got it.
Gotta keep the money rolling
and
in
this
somehow.
And this is where we end this episode so that we can all talk privately and take a road trip, which I'm, you know, absolutely fine doing. I have a car and I'm happy to do it. So, I mean, I just want to say I've always wanted to find buried treasure.
Yes.
Maybe that's a romantic idea. I'm from New Jersey. Every time I'm down the shore, don't at me. Every time I'm down the shore, I'm like, where is the message in a bottle from Liam Neeson? Like, where is my husband? So, like, I understand it. I want to be Beale's friend. I'd like to go back to the early 1800s, not to, like, particularly live in that time, but just to go time travel to get the treasure.
Yeah.
But, you know, as we move forward, so Beale places these ciphertexts and some other papers into an iron box, which in 1822, he entrusted the box to a Lynchburg innkeeper named Robert Morris. Now, Beale told Morris not to open the box unless he or one of his men failed to return from their journey within 10 years. Okay. So sending a letter from St. Louis a few months later, Beale promises Morris that a friend in St. Louis would mail the key to the cryptograms. However, it never arrived. Well, sidebar, we're having a problem with the USPS in 2020, 2021. So, I mean, this seems to be understandable. So the key never arrives. Surprise, surprise. So it's not until 1845 that Morris ends up opening the box. And inside he finds two plain text letters from Beale and several pages of ciphertext separated into papers 1, 2, and 3. And Morris had no luck in solving the ciphers. And so decades later, he left the box and its contents to an unnamed friend. Now, the friend, then using an edition of the United States Declaration of Independence as the key for a modified book cipher, sure, successfully deciphers the second ciphertext, which gave a description of the buried treasure. And then, unable to solve the other two ciphertexts, the friend ultimately made the letters and ciphertexts public in this pamphlet entitled The Beale Papers, which was published by yet another friend, James B. Ward, in 1885. Ward is thus not, quote, the friend. Ward himself is almost untraceable in local records, except that a man with that name owned a home in which a lady named Sarah Morris was identified as the spouse of Robert Morris, died at age 77 in 1863. He's also recorded as becoming a master mason in 1863. Oh, like Freemason. I don't know. Let's have a whole other episode to talk about these Freemasons. I don't really like, like, what a time, what a time. So
fascinating.
So here's the deciphered message from paper number two. Here's what it reads. I have deposited in the county of Bedford, about 4 miles from Buford's, in an excavation or vault 6 feet below the surface of the ground, the following articles belonging jointly to the parties whose names are given in number three herewith. The first deposit consisted of 1,114 pounds of gold and 3,812 pounds of silver, deposited in November of 1819. The second was made December 1821 and consisted of 1,907 pounds of gold and 1,288 of silver, also jewels, obtained in St. Louis in exchange to save transportation and valued at $13,000. The above is securely packed in iron pots with iron covers. Sidebar, my grandma would do that. The vault is roughly lined with stone, and the vessels rest on solid stone and are covered with others. Paper number one describes the exact locality of the vault so that no difficulty will be had in finding it. Okay, so the second cipher could be decrypted fairly easily using a modified copy of the United States Declaration of Independence, but some editing is necessary here. So to decrypt it, one finds the word corresponding to the number. So for example, the first number is 115, and the 115th word in the Declaration of Independence is instituted. So it takes the first letter of that word, which is I. This is too difficult for me. I honestly, like, sorry, I could barely get through a book. But the version of the U.S. Declaration of Independence is substantially different from the original. This is the one that Beale used. So just note to self. And the value of the treasure's total weight is about 3 tons, which is described in the second cryptogram. And it includes approximately 35,000 troy ounces of gold, 61,000 troy ounces of silver worth about $42 million and $1 million respectively in January of 2017, and jewels worth about $220,000 in 2017.
That's a lot of dollars.
Save us.
I want that.
Yeah. I will say, ladies, a couple things. Number one, Wikipedia has given us an overview of innkeeper Robert Morris with two S's. Like, here's the outline, and then you had the specificity, but they really focus a lot on this innkeeper and his friends, don't they? Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. And the other thing, Jessica,
ma'am,
you remember when we did the Zodiac?
Yes.
And we put that challenge out there to solve those ciphers. And you know what? They were solved.
Yeah, they were.
And we never got on Oprah for that. She's still doing her talk show. Sure. In my head, she is, because I need that
in
my life.
What do you mean, is she? She just had the interview of a lifetime.
I know. But I want her at my 4 o'clock hour Eastern.
I understand.
Every day. But I'm just saying, you know, we put the call out and people solved it during the pandemic. It's a pandemic. This is the perfect time to solve the Beale ciphers. Is it not?
This is so true.
Killers, solve it, and then me, Jessica, and Rashidro will do a selfie for you. That's your prize.
But also, we get a cut.
You don't get any treasure. Yeah, we get a cut.
Yeah.
That's right.
Duh.
Say that again, Jess.
Hi, I'm businesswoman, 2021. We get a cut.
That's right. Now, there has been considerable debate over whether the remaining two ciphers, I'm going to say ciphers, you guys, it keeps saying ciphertexts. I'm like, we're going to do abbreves here, ciphers.
Yes.
So there's been considerable debate over whether the remaining two ciphers are real or hoaxes.
Can I say something?
Yeah, please do.
When you said ciphertexts, it just reminds me of the Real Housewives episode. Yes, I also watch Real Housewives. It's a character study. And it reminds me of the Real Housewives of New Jersey because, like, can we, like, Teresa just doesn't know her ass from her elbow. And when she talks about texting, she's like, you know, I don't really like when he texts me. And I'm like, I'm sorry, what? Who?
No.
What are you talking about? She's like, I don't know. I think she's in a Texas me. So that's where I went with that. And that's what I thought.
Is she saying the state name of Texas instead of Texas?
Yeah, like, she's like, I don't know. Like? I don't know if he's in he said he Texas you. I'm like, nope.
Oh, wow.
Okay, well, that's great.
Honey. Yeah, is she sober when she's
Yes, of course she is. She's okay. She's absolutely sober and just, you know, she's okay. Not necessarily, you know, whatever.
Killing It on Broadway is proud to support A-STEP, artists striving to end poverty. This organization was started by our friend Mary Mitchell Campbell, musical director of Broadway and beyond, who also wrote our theme song,
As we all know, the arts are in a challenging time right now in the U.S., and A-STEP has been doing innovative things during this pandemic, including feeding thousands of families, as well as bringing the arts to children. If you are able, please go to astep.org to make a contribution to the Arts Resilience Fund so they can keep killing it by bringing smiles to the faces of children everywhere.
That's astep.org. Thanks, killers.
Getting back to this tale, an early researcher, Carl Hammer of Sperry Univac, used supercomputers of the late 1960s to analyze the ciphers and found that while the ciphers were poorly encoded, the two undeciphered ones did not show the patterns one would expect of randomly chosen numbers and probably encoded an intelligible text. Other questions remain about the authenticity of the pamphlet's account. In the words of one researcher, quote, "To me, the pamphlet story has all the earmarks of a fake. There was no evidence save the word of the unknown author of the pamphlet that he ever had the papers," end quote. The pamphlet's background story has several implausibilities and is based almost entirely on circumstantial evidence and hearsay. Later cryptographers have claimed that the two remaining ciphers have statistical characteristics which suggest that they are not actual encryptions of an English plain text. Alphabetical sequences such as bear with me, there's like two M's and two P's, whatever, as thanks Jess for letting me borrow that for $1 million, they're both non-random as indicated by Carl Hammer and not words in English. Others have also questioned why Beale would have bothered writing three different ciphers with at least two keys, if not ciphers, for what is essentially a single message in the first place, particularly if he wanted to ensure that the next of kin received their share. As it is, with the treasure described, there is no incentive to decode the third cipher. Everyone with me? Take a glass of water.
I mean, okay. Really, though?
I mean, it's intense. All right. Analysis of the language used by the author of the pamphlet. The uses of punctuation, relative clauses, infinitives, conjunct. We have to take English class for this story, you guys. Okay. Infinitives, conjunctives, and so on has detected significant correlations between it and the writing style of Beale's letters, including the plain text of the second cipher, suggesting that they may have been written by the same person. The letters also contain several English words, such as improvise, not otherwise recorded before the 1820s in English, but used from French from 1786 in the New Orleans area, and stampede, Spanish, which means an uproar. Beale's stampeding apparently first appears in print in the English language in 1832, but was used from 1786 to 1823 in New Orleans in French and Spanish. Ugh. Okay. The second message describing the treasure has been deciphered, but the others have not, suggesting a deliberate ploy to encourage interest in deciphering the other two texts, only to discover that they are hoaxes. In addition, the original sale price of the pamphlet, 50 cents, was a high price for the time. Adjusted for inflation, that's equivalent to about 14 bucks today. And the author writes that he expects a wide circulation. Now, the third cipher appears to be too short to list 30 individuals next of kin. It's another red flag. If the Declaration of Independence is used as a key for the first cipher, it yields alphabetical sequences, like we mentioned before, with two I's, two M's, two P's, whatever. That's another $1 million borrowed from Jessica Voss. Thanks, Jess, and others. According to the American Cryptogram Association, the chances of such sequences appearing multiple times in the one ciphertext by chance are less than 1 in 100 million. Although it is conceivable that the first cipher was intended as a proof of concept, letting decoders know that they were on the right track for one or more of the subsequent ciphers, such a proof would be redundant as the success of the key with respect to the second document would provide the same evidence on its own. I'm just going to stop right here before Jess takes over to say to you ladies, or rather ask you, are you visual learners or audio learners? Because I'm a visual learner. When I was reading this, it made sense to me. As I'm saying it out loud, my head hurts. I need painkillers and a nap. I need a Fig Newton and a nap now.
Okay.
I
need a Fig Newton and a nap. And my friend Holly, our friend Holly Rashidra told me that years
Holly
ago
Davis
and it
Bieber.
Stuck with me. And I think she listens to our show. So, hey, Holly. Hey.
Hey, Holly.
It's a lot of information, so.
It's so much.
Yeah.
It is a hell of a lot of information. For it not to have been solved. I mean, this is just gross. Mm-hmm. But here we are back to Robert Hujimowicz, Robert Morris.
With two S's.
Who says, like, right, he's the friend of Beale. He's represented in this pamphlet. And he says that he was running the Washington Hotel in 1820. However, records show that he did not start in that position until at least 1823. So, liar, liar, pants on fire. Or like whatever you were wearing at the time in the 1800s. Like we're
pantaloons?
Pantaloons on fire. And now, of course, there have been a very many attempts to break these remaining ciphers. And like talk about the texts, and most attempts have tried other historical texts as keys. For example, like instead of the Declaration of Independence, they used the Magna Carta. They've used various books of the Bible. They've used the U.S. Constitution. They used the Virginia Royal Charter.
They used Jessica Voss, Wild and Free. You can find it. You can find it now.
Hi, everyone. You can stream that wherever you get your podcast. I mean, thank you so much. Live music, Billboard charts. Like the Virginia Royal Charter. Anyway,
it's
now,
that in.
Thank you, Rashindra. Now, everyone's assuming here that these ciphertexts were produced with some book cipher, but nobody has been able to successfully recognize any of these ciphers to date. So breaking them might depend on absolute random chance. Like, for instance, like, does it get broken by a book? Or does it get broken by a puzzle? Or does it get broken by, what's that thing? I'm doing something with my hands.
Rubik's Cube?
A Rubik's Cube.
So for those of you, we do not film our podcasts because normally we don't like to shower. So everything is audio. So I just did a thing with my hands to show Rubik's Cube, which is charades for today. So yes. Even like the most skilled they call them cryptanalysts, but I like to say cryptanalysts who have attempted these ciphers have never gotten it correct. So I'm like, is this real? Is this not real? That's where I'm going with this. And mm-hmm. Beale could have used a document that he'd written himself for either or both of the remaining keys or a document of his own or something randomly selected for the third source. In either case, nobody can crack the codes. It's been pretty useless. But now we're on to the whole thing, like, did he even exist in the first place? Thomas Beale, this is. Rashidra, do you believe he existed?
I feel like he existed, but I think, much as I want to believe, because I want to become a cryptanalyst and solve it and find the treasure for myself. It is very odd that after all this time, no one has been able to figure out either of the other two. So obviously the second one is real, but I don't know about the other two. I don't know about the existence of the other two.
I know. And now here we are questioning, I'm throwing it out there because we like to do all sides here, the existence of Thomas Beale himself. So we get to this U.S. Census record in 1810, and it shows two persons named Thomas Beale, one in Connecticut and one in New Hampshire. However, the population schedules from the 1810 U.S. Census are completely missing from seven states, one territory, the District of Columbia, and 18 of the countries of Virginia. Sorry,
counties.
18 of the counties of Virginia. Now, the 1820 U.S. Census has two persons named Thomas Beale. Captain Thomas Beale of the Battle of New Orleans in 1815 in Louisiana, originally from Virginia, Beaudetour County. Fincastle area, 12 miles from Bedford County, and one in Tennessee, and a Thomas K. Beale in Virginia, but the population schedules are completely missing for three states and one territory. So before 1850, the U.S. Census recorded the names of only the heads of households.
Ugh. Mm-hmm. Figure.
Eyeroll.com, hashtag feminism. Others in the household were only just counted, okay? But they were not recorded. So Beale, if he existed, he may have been living in someone else's household, for example. So in addition, a man named Thomas Beale, B-E-A-L-L, appears in the customer lists of St. Louis Post Department in 1820. And according to the pamphlet, Beale sent a letter from St. Louis in 1822. Now, additionally, a Cheyenne legend exists about gold and silver being taken from the West and buried in the mountains in the East, dating from roughly 1820. So then we get to, like, Fascination Station, this entire thing.
Because it's not fascinating enough.
I mean, like, what station are we at? Are we at, what station are we at? Are we in the Wizarding World of Harry Potter? But the Fascination Station of this is one Edgar Allan Poe. And it's been suggested, Rashidra is nodding her head right now. And if there were a monologue,
up and down,
the monologue would be, that is correct, Edgar Allan Poe. It has been suggested that he is the pamphlet's real author because he had a very big interest in cryptography, naturally. And it was well known that he placed notices of his abilities in the Philadelphia paper, Alexander's Weekly Express Messenger, inviting submissions of ciphers, which, excuse me, nodes, inviting submissions of ciphers, which he proceeded to solve. And in 1843, he used a cryptogram as a plot device in his short story called The Gold Bug. Now, from 1820, he was also living in Richmond, Virginia at the time of Beale's alleged encounters with Morris. And in February of 1826, Poe enrolled as a student at the University of Virginia in Charlottesville. But with mounting debts, he left for Boston in April of 1827. Now, research and facts seem to debunk Edgar Allan Poe's authorship. He died in 1849, well before the Beale Papers were first published in 1885, and the pamphlet also mentions the American Civil War that started in 1861. So a gent named William Poundstone, interesting last name, American author and skeptic, and stylometric analyst. I love that word so much and using it wrong. I'm sorry. But he had stylometric analysis performed on this pamphlet for his 1983 book, Biggest Secrets. And he found that Poe's prose, okay.
Say that five times fast.
You say it five times fast.
Oh God. Poe's prose, nope. I didn't do my red leather, yellow leather yet today. Poe's prose, nope.
That's hard.
It is.
Poe's prose. Pez.
Post pros.
Oh, show off.
The winner. Chicken dinner.
Hello.
Wow. Okay. Excuse my life. Okay, so he found that post pros is significantly different from the grammatical structure used by the author who actually wrote the Beale Papers. This is never getting solved. I'm just going to say it right now for anybody listening who's like stayed with us to this point of like, ooh, where's the paper? Paper is buried. Treasure, it's 18 carats. And like none of this seems to ever, it's not going to get solved in my opinion. I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer.
Okay. But no, it's quite all right. We are close to the end though, and I think we should save your rage for the follow-up. I love how enraged you are by
this. Because it is, it's like you get through all of this and there's so many like, oh, there's so many twists and turns of, oh, it could be, well, that's plausible, but then they're like, just kidding, nope.
It's not rage,
everything.
It's not rage, but you're so frustrated and you're, look at me, guy, I'm crying, I'm laughing so hard.
This is full of lies.
She's like, I gotta go, I need a nap.
I gotta call Equity. I honestly have to call Equity because I'm gonna add. I gotta add something into these rules about the new Coco opening because.
Listen, I personally feel like Thomas Beale is a real person. I think somebody found this treasure and entrusted him to do whatever with it, and I think he spent it. I think he split it amongst his own heirs or his friends or whatever, and then sent everyone on this like magical goose chase. And so it did exist, but it's gone.
Okay,
I'm upset. I'm fucking pissed. I'm sorry. Like, excuse my French, but I just had to say it because this guy, honestly.
Teresa, I'm going to text this to you. I'm going to calm down.
I'm sorry, prostitution whore.
Now, okay. I'm going to dim the lights. Everyone have a Nilla wafer and a little orange drink. Okay, here we go.
So good.
Now, of course, there have been many search attempts. Despite the Beale papers' unproven veracity, treasure hunters have not been deterred from trying to find the vault. Of course not, because it's fascinating. Now, the information that there is buried treasure in Bedford County has stimulated many expeditions with shovels and other implements of discovery looking for likely spots. For more than 100 years, people have been arrested for trespassing and unauthorized digging, some of them in groups, as in the case of people from Pennsylvania in the 1990s. Several digs were completed at the top of Porter's Mountain, one in the late 1980s with the landowner's permission, as long as any treasure found was split 50-50. Was that your house, Jessica? Your businesswoman?
Yes. Yes, that's right. However, the treasure hunters only found Civil War artifacts. As the value of these artifacts paid for time and equipment rental, the expedition broke even. That's nice. The story has been the subject of multiple television documentaries,
such as the UK's Mystery Series, a segment in the 7th special of Unsolved Mysteries, and the 2011 Declaration of Independence episode of the History Channel TV show, Brad Meltzer's Decoded. There are also several books and considerable internet activity. In 2014, the National Geographic TV show The Numbers Game referred to the Beale ciphers as one of the strongest passwords ever created. And like the Zodiac cipher, killers were in a pandemic, as we said, so go for it, and we need you to figure it out.
Never.
Please.
Sorry, never.
We're there, Jess. Let it go. Rage, go.
Look, okay, guess what? I'm pissed, okay? I want to tell everybody here who's listening to this podcast episode, who's like, I love puzzles. I'm going to go and do my DIY, and I'm going to go solve the case of, you know, the Beale Sisters of Grey Gardens. Like, I don't want anything to do with it. I'm angry about it. Nothing's going to get solved here. There is no gold.
It's gone.
I don't even know. It's going to be a box.
Do you have a theory? Do you have a theory about what happened?
Yeah, it's a lie.
No, here's the thing. I don't think it's a lie. Okay. I think it existed. I think Thomas Beale existed. I think somebody found all of this massive treasure when they were buffalo hunting and whatever. And I think someone definitely said, hey, Beale, why don't you take this back and like make sure my people get it? And I think Beale took the treasure and he split it amongst his friends. Maybe he had his own debts that he had to pay off. I think Beale has done something and the treasure is now gone. I think it existed, but it's gone. And then he had to cover his tracks and he had to save his own butt. And so he was like, I'm going to do these ciphers because as long as I can blame it on the fact that nobody can figure out the ciphers, then nobody will ever suspect me. And it'll be fine. Nothing to see here. It's a lie. It's not a lie, but I think it's gone.
She, you know what she just booked? The new Disney villain, Thomas Beale. And it's and that's exactly what this is. Like,
I'm hunting buffalo. La, la, la.
Yeah, Jen. Anybody? Yeah, no, I'm sorry. But I'm going to say, what do you think about this? Because I'm going to be really honest with you. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a fucking cardboard box with some kind of like cat body in it. And that's what the treasure is. And there's like some kind of jewel that was given to the cat. And that I don't know. I feel upset. I'm upset. Okay. I feel duped. I don't like feeling duped.
All right. I understand. I hear you.
Mom.
I feel I see your pain. We're here for you. So you're asking me what I think. Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah.
I obviously don't know the answer. I did watch that History Channel TV show Decoded, and they interview a cousin or something of Edgar Allan Poe, and you know, and they interview a couple of people who each have their own theories. I think that it's sexy to think it was Edgar Allan Poe, just like it's sexy to think of treasure, which immediately makes me skeptical of that because it's just too delicious that it was a giant prank by Edgar Allan Poe. I mean, I would love it to be Edgar Allan Poe. If I had to guess, it's one of two things. It was something to sell papers, to sell more and to sell more and to sell more because everybody wants a dollar. And then if it was a real thing, it doesn't matter because those iron containers, I'm sure it's just been filled with mud and water and washed out to sea or under some swamp. And if it did exist, it doesn't matter anymore because it's toast. Those are my two thoughts about it.
Well, that brought us down. Brought me down.
Maybe
well,
that's that, where.
What
the
do
Buffalo
I do better than anybody?
From.
Bring down the party. We've covered this. That's my job.
It's part
here.
Of your charm.
No, I appreciate it. I like to be brought. Because I would still be riding high on my anger theories. But you sure did. You brought it. You brought it in for the win.
Do we think that
you
this
know, Jessica?
Is,
that's what I don't know what Rashidra thinks, but all of my friends who listen to that—that's what they react to. That we're like, your chemistry is really good because you're just so you're just alike enough, but completely opposite.
Yeah, we here in my we here in the Jessica Vosk brain call that the anchor in the balloon, and I know I'm oftentimes the balloon, y'all, and that's okay. Every person who I like, I don't mean to sound like that I own Bumble, but I just want to say that I always say to the gents, I say, honey, I'm always going to be the balloon, and you're going to have to, and you're going to have to be like this. Let's bring her back in. She's got squirrel. And so I'm okay with it. You are the anchor. And Rashidra seems to be an anchor too.
Rashidra, what would you think you are? The anchor or the balloon? Does it change depending on the person you're with? Because in my
marriage,
I'm going to say I'm the balloon in my marriage.
See, and in my marriage, I'm the anchor.
Mm-hmm.
It depends. But then, you know, I think we all kind of have to be balloony to do what we do in some ways.
I think we're all a little bit of both. I'll tell you what, I guess we have both been the anchor and the balloon for this. But in general, sure, I'm the anchor. Sometimes I'm a shiny anchor and my chain is all coiled up. But there are times where I'm a rusty old anchor.
And sometimes I'm a balloon filled with helium. And sometimes I'm a balloon filled with still air. But... all time. Oh, Rashidra is in it today. She's like, she's with us. She's brought her flair and zazz. She's been laughing this entire time in her new apartment,
giggly.
But outfitted with really great sound system. She's in a booth here, which looks like she's in a regular recording room.
Beautiful voice.
Beautiful.
World, universe, cast Rashidra in all your voiceover needs. For all your voiceover needs. She's
Please pick me. Pay me.
Oh my God, girl. Guess
fingers
what?
Fingers crossed.
I hope that you get sexited. Texas.
I know, girl. You're so sweet.
Teresa, she's in Texas, you. She's in Texas.
Thank you so much for being here, Rashidra.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy that you're, I'm so happy we got to meet for real, what I would call like in person, but in the Coco.
Rashidra, we love you.
I love you.
And you I already love you. And even though we've only known each other for 1.5 seconds, I love you. And I wanted to say it in a cryptogram.
Well, you're so sweet.
Well, listen, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thank you for being a part of this.
Thank you for having me. And, you know, I wish that we could all have and share in the treasure. But I think Tom's already spent it. It's not there.
It's not there, please.
He's the worst. He sucks.
Rashidra, we're going to let you have the last word on that. And we thank you so, so much.
I love you.
Bye.
Bye. Brilliant, funny, beautiful, sassy, golden, like buried treasure, if you will. This particular story of mystery may have annoyed me a little bit, but Rashidra does not. And so we just have to say again, thank you to Rashidra for coming on today. And also thank you to our crime fam. Thanks for sticking with us on this cryptographical analysis story. We love you to pieces. We thank you so much for listening. And until next time, keep killing it.
Don't kill anyone.
Killers, go to our Patreon page and join us to get exclusive bonus content. And follow us on Instagram at Killing It On Broadway and Twitter at Killing It On B-Way.
Subscribe to us for free wherever you download your podcasts.
And go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and a lovely review. It'll be good for you.
Killing It On Broadway is a production of Killing It On Broadway, LLC.
Music by Mary Mitchell Campbell. Orchestrations, Benedict Braxton Smith.
Edited and engineered by Smokey.
Morale officers, Fred and Nelson. Say goodbye, Fred.
Say goodbye, Nelson.